I'm Adam, and welcome to Tales from the Potting Bench, a gardening podcast where you'll hear tales and stories from the most interesting and different people from the world of both indoor and outdoor gardening. This season is sponsored by the wonderful people at Plant Grow, producers of award-winning organic fertilisers made with zero chemicals, great for your garden and even greater for the planet. The first episode of the new season features a conversation with garden designer and judge on Channel 4's Garden of the Year, Manoj Maldo. Manoj gives a great insight into his previous life in fashion and how gardening isn't all that different from that world. We also talk about his 2017 Chelsea Flower Show garden inspired by Mexico. Enjoy. For anyone listening that is not familiar with you right now, who are you and what do you do?
Well, I'm Manoj Maldo. I'm a garden designer, an ex-fashion designer. I used to work as a creative director in the fashion industry, and I was in that industry for 18 years, then gave it all up and went back to school to study garden design. So that's what I do. I'm an award-winning garden designer. I'm also an RHS judge and an RHS ambassador for inclusivity. And I work on TV and I do some writing, which I really enjoy as well.
You don't do much then?
No. Just a bit.
Just a little bit. So fashion to garden design, I suppose initially seems quite a leap, but it's not really, is it? It's actually quite similar in a way. Or there are a lot of transferable things.
I have got very transferable skills from fashion. It's funny because when I first chose to give up fashion and go into garden design, so many people said to me, "Are you mad? Like, they are so worlds apart." And I said, "Well, actually, they're not really." Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I am still designing with proportions, texture, color, still create mood boards, color palettes, things like that. Okay, my materials might have changed. You know, it's not sort of crinolines anymore, it's more camellias. But in a way, the thought process, the way you design, is still pretty much the same. And I'm very used to doing presentations. I was, you know, in the fashion industry as a creative director, I would have to walk into a showroom and present to directors and heads of buying, senior buyers and merchandisers. So I'm very used to presenting. And so in a way, to present boards, designs to a client is slightly water off a duck's back for me.
Yeah, sure.
So yes, there are definitely transferable skills. And I think once you have a design eye, yeah, then you can, and no matter what sphere of design, you can always transfer those skills into another area of design. So I think there are easily transferable skills from fashion into garden design. Our industry, horticulture and fashion, do have a bit of a symbiotic relationship, because if you look at the prints that end up on the catwalks, they're all floral inspired. The colors are probably inspired by flora and fauna. And likewise, I think even our industry is influenced by what is happening on the catwalks as well. You know, all of a sudden, purple or orange or whatever will suddenly become the big color throughout the show.
Very true. Yeah, that's so true.
And where does that stem from? That probably stems from suddenly all the catwalk designers have been showing collections where the strongest colors were purples or oranges.
And
they're now filtering through into garden design, and they'll probably filter through to interiors as well, you know, the textiles and interiors. So
that is so true. You've just reminded me of The Devil Wears Prada. There's a bit where she says about the kind of the latest
colour and it being, and where that's kind of come from, it will initially start with a really high-end fashion house, but then a year or so later, suddenly that colour is in Primark, but then it's not that colour in the high-end fashion house anymore. And it's the way that that flows. I've never thought about that. Yeah.
And that's how it works. So I think that there's a real relationship in many ways of how our industry influences fashion, but likewise fashion influences our industry as well. And that's a good thing, I think. I mean, you look at laces, the beautiful guipure laces and things like that, they use in the fashion industry. If you look at them, often they have got florals and foliage and stuff like that incorporated in the design. I mean, I always say to people that, you know, for me, when I'm creating a planting plan, it's a little bit like working a print on a piece of silk, you know. So when you think about it in that respect, then yes, there are loads of similarities.
They definitely are. How long were you in fashion for before you made the leap?
18 years.
So 18 years is not a, you know, it's not a drop in the ocean, is it? For you to then suddenly decide that gardening or garden design, how did that come about?
Okay, so being in fashion for 18 years, I mean, when I started out in my career, I have worked with some of the most amazing, real go-getters in buying and in merchandising. But through the years, I could feel changes happening, and the caliber of buyers, not so much merchandisers, but certainly buyers, was actually rapidly going downhill in the fashion industry.
Right.
And I kind of started sensing that. And I said to one particular retailer that I used to design for, you'll probably get who I'm talking about in a minute. I said to their buying directors and heads of buying, I said, you really need to change your buying strategies, because if you don't, your doors are going to close one day. Well, they never took that on board. And what's happened?
Yeah.
Doors closed. That was the time when that light bulb moment happened. And I thought, before I become this old man with, you know, being very angry about what's going on in this issue, it's better for me to kind of just say goodbye, I'm moving on.
Was gardening something that was always an interest of yours during that time, or how did that?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, in terms of gardening, when we first moved to this country, because I was born in Mombasa, and my family, my parents and my siblings, we moved over to the UK, and I think the interest in gardening was probably always kind of hidden in the back of my mind, because I remember when we were living in Mombasa, and my dad had this balcony where he had these enormous pots that he'd had made, and he used to grow his roses and jasmine and various other things on there. And I do have memories of that. But I think what happened, how the interest really then grew from that, was when my eldest brother decided that he was going to dig a vegetable plot at the back of the garden. And he recruited me and my other brother, the middle one. And he said, right, come on, guys, you're going to come and help me. So we helped him create this vegetable bed. And I think that's where it all started, you know. And that whole thing about not only just actually creating this vegetable bed, but growing things from seed and then actually being able to harvest the crops. You know, we had some that year, we had amazing peas, cucumbers, we grew coriander, we grew radish. I mean, God, we must have grown so many things. And I think that's where it all started from. And then of course I got interested in gardening, and then I used to look after the house plants in our house and all of that. So and it's just kept going from there.
Not stopped. That passion's not gone. No.
And you know, as kind of I've entered the horticultural industry, my my interest has kind of slightly gone into Mediterranean plants as well.
Is that something that I don't know if exotic is a particular interest, because your Chelsea garden was it Mexican inspired?
It was Mexican inspired, so it was much more about drought resistant plants.
Which, how topical is that? I mean, right now that's the most topical.
Exactly. Yeah. In fact, it was so funny because we're talking to the tree suppliers today. I said to them that I'm more interested in trees that are going to be drought resistant, because going forward, realistically, that's what, you know, we should be preparing ourselves for the future. If our summers are going to continue to be like what we've had this year, then we have got to be planting for the future. And so therefore we need to be planting plants that will tolerate that sort of heat. And yes, at the time, I think there were two things that my Chelsea garden probably did. Was A, introduce a real bang of color to Chelsea, and that came about through many a conversation that I've had with visitors there, and so many people said to me that, you know, I go to Chelsea every year, and really over the years I've just felt that the gardens have just fused into one big garden,
because
they all have the same plants, they all have the same colors and all that. And I'd never thought about that before. But when I started hearing that, I thought, oh my God, actually, yes, I see what you mean. Now, one could argue that, you know, designers choose to use those plants because actually those are the ones that will be more readily available at the time of Chelsea, which I can understand. But I, having kind of had these conversations, I wanted to make sure that I created a garden that was going to be substantially different from what was the usual Chelsea. And hence the reason why I kind of went for the drought resistant. But then I also introduced things like agaves and succulents into my garden. But now when you, and you know, I had this triple-headed Dracaena Draco in my garden, I had the agave attenuatus, I had the first flowering agave in a show garden at Chelsea. You know, so I had these unusual plants which haven't really been shown in show gardens at Chelsea. And also then the bang of colour, because obviously the pink and orange walls and all
of
that.
Well, I was going to say that, I mean, that initially, that I know exactly what you mean about the way that the gardens kind of merge into one. And I suppose some of that is probably conscious, that you're not just jumping from one thing to another to another. It's that you're kind of flowing through. I suppose that some of that is perhaps conscious. But certainly when you see, I imagine, I didn't see that year, but I imagine that immediately stopped you in your tracks and it was immediately different to its surroundings.
What's really funny was that a couple of things happened, actually. The visitors actually visiting Chelsea that year stopped at the garden, and some of them had actually been to Mexico,
right,
and some of them hadn't. But they all said, when I stand here, one thing that happens is your garden makes me smile.
Right.
And the other thing was, they said, it actually takes me to Mexico. Like, it transports me to another place. And I think if a space that you've designed can conjure those feelings and emotions in a person, then I think you've done your job.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And I think that's really, really important. For me, even now, not just because I'm kind of judging gardens at shows, but I've always said, prior to actually becoming an art registrar, I've always said that the gardens for me that actually win hands down are the ones that actually grab me here, you know, because they're the ones that I actually want to be inside. They're the ones that I actually want to go and sit in. You know, I want to be in that space.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I remember I remember Sarah Eberly's garden, the Resilience Garden. That garden really did that for me. And there was Cleve West's M&G Garden, which was, I remember it clearly, because what you had to do is as you entered the garden, you had to go along and then you had to step down into a huge sunken area that had this thunderous water feature.
Yeah.
And that was another one that absolutely did it for me. It was like, I just wanted to go inside and be in that space. And if a garden can do that, then that garden's actually doing its job.
I think the resilience, you know, I picture the resilience garden, because I've been looking at some of the old gardens, and I just think it did so many different things. But I think the forestry message was just so important with that one, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I love the fact that she, obviously, because of her message, she had such a mix of plants in there from all areas of the world. And one could argue, well, okay, well, are they actually all going to grow in the same garden, in the same conditions? But actually, that's the whole thing about the resilience garden.
Mm.
You know, it's funny because I've recently, you know, sat in the Beth Chatto Symposium, which was absolutely fantastic. And this whole question arose of, should we be planting native plants? You know, should we be actually just concentrating on natives? And I remember as a student sitting in a lecture that Chris Beardshaw gave us, and he made a really, really good point and said that actually, if we did plant all native plants, then we were swept through by a pest or a disease that affected all of our natives, what would we do? So I don't believe that we should be, yes, plant native plants, that's fine. Mm. But I don't think the concentration should be totally native.
No.
Because by introducing plants from other countries, other places, I think what we do is we help to strengthen our own native species as well.
Yeah.
And we protect them as
absolutely.
Well. So, you know, I think what Chris said in that lecture is very right. You know, we've got to be very careful about how we make those decisions about just going native.
I think you're right. And I think that whole idea about the kind of resilience, and then I suppose going back to your garden, which is kind of a resilience in terms of the drought, I suppose. How did Chelsea fare for you in terms of weather that year? Was it kind to your garden?
It was brilliant. It was probably one of the hottest summers we had. Yeah, God, I got such a tan. Because I was probably one of the only designers who was on my garden throughout the show. But Jesus, it was hot. Yeah. So no, it was brilliant for me. And actually what I had cleverly done was I had said to the RHS, could they prove to me via maybe photos or whatever that the spot that they had allocated to me got plenty of sun.
Yeah.
You know, obviously because it was a Mexican garden, it was, you know, drought resistant plants. And it, you know, if I had been given a shady spot, I don't think it would have had the same feeling.
You haven't done another Chelsea since then, have you?
No, I haven't. Although I have done a design for Chelsea, and I almost had an international sponsor, but that kind of fell by the wayside, sadly, for various reasons. The people at the RHS have seen this design and said, oh my God, your first garden was good. This is bloody brilliant, you know.
Oh, no.
So it's a case of finding that sponsor who is going to believe, first of all, believe in the garden, because that's really important. For me, certainly, if any organization was going to believe or sponsor me in a design, they would need to believe in this garden as much as I do. But then, yes, it's finding the funding.
Yeah.
to do that. But I would love it if a sponsor came along and had a look at a design at the design and said, yeah, we're going for it. We want this. Because it is an amazing design.
Oh, okay.
I say it myself, I know I've designed it, but I think if it was installed at Chelsea, I think it could cause a real wow factor.
Oh,
there.
Wow. Okay. So that's a possible for the future then.
Yes, I'm hoping. I'm hoping. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you never know. The new might allow me to build it one day. Yeah.
You never know. So yeah. You've mentioned within a lot of that about the RHS judging and a lot of the judging. Mm. It would be absolutely remiss of me not to mention Garden of the Year, because I mean, I'm not just saying this, I'm talking to you. It was fantastic to have for gardeners to absolutely, you cannot miss this program. Mm. What a fantastic show, genuinely, yeah. Just absolutely brilliant, wasn't it?
It was amazing, honestly. We had such an amazing time. Both Zoe Lachlan and myself had an amazing time going around, well, the country, really, looking at these gardens and gardens that where, you know, the homeowners are so passionate about their outdoor space, which was incredible. The production team that we worked with were amazing as well. They were so good, so talented. And the great thing was that actually as a team we all gelled really well.
You could tell I mean, just the on screen, I mean, chemistry is probably strong, but it definitely that came across. And yeah. I think you were all so different, and for that to gel made it even better, I think.
Absolutely. And it was lovely that, you know, Lachlan was the specialist in plants and horticulture and all of that, you know, and his knowledge is amazing. I was kind of looking at design, but actually having Zoe there as well was great, because she's a garden enthusiast. She's not necessarily a professional in the industry, but what she's doing is she's actually looking at the garden from a homeowner's point of view. And I think that's really, really important, because sometimes what can happen, designers get very passionate about their designs and can actually lose that thread of how the space should actually connect with the homeowner and work for them.
Absolutely.
So it was really good to have that there, you know, for Zoe to be able to say, actually, for me, this really works because, you know, I've got kids and this is a space for them and this is where I'd like to entertain and all of that. It was amazing. And
I think it's worth us just as a for anyone that's not watched it, as a spoiler alert, for we're inevitably going to mention the winners in a minute.
Yeah.
it's really funny that you just really nice actually hearing you say the different things that the three of you bought, because I'm lucky enough to have been to the Cheshire Garden. I think from a very amateur gardening perspective from my own, I suppose that's Zoe's perspective. But what you've said, from the planting to the design to the actual, is this a functional space? Mm. That does all of those things. And talk about, I mean, not nearly as dense as perhaps like the Walsall Garden or whatever, but to have so many different pockets of what could be individual gardens that somehow link.
And that's gorgeous. That was exactly it. Because what we were looking at in that particular garden, or what we found really interesting, and I think we actually even said it to camera, that what was lovely as a viewer watching that program and seeing that garden, you could almost take just one small area and turn it into your little back garden. You know, it could become a courtyard space, or, you know, so there were so many inspirational ideas within that garden that actually viewers had lots to take home. And that's what was lovely about that garden. It's about how they've divided that space, how they've used the space, how they've actually created the planting, but more so how it inspires other people, you know. And that's what was so lovely. Having said that, though, I tell you, judging those gardens and every single garden that was on that final table, that was so, between Zoe Lackland and myself, that was so hard.
I bet. Like choosing your favourite child, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and Lachlan and I think Zoe had to play referee at one point. She was like, really, so like, you two, I know you're going to have tantrums in a minute. But you know, when you get passionate about things, that's what happens. And both Lachlan and I were passionate about the gardens that we thought really, really worked. And to kind of then have to make those choices, it was really, and I remember saying that actually it was harder than judging a Chelsea garden. Because, you know, one has to remember these are people's private spaces. And they have created them with some meaning, a personal meaning to them. And of course the space works for them. So it was so hard to kind of then bring it down to the final three. And in fact, to be honest, in those, out of the three, the final three, quite frankly, it could have swung anywhere. Anyway.
I mean, we hope there'll be another one. Do you know?
Yeah, we hope there'll be another one. I'm still talking to the producers, and I think they're just waiting to hear back from the commissioners, and fingers crossed. I think they're quietly confident, but I guess what they really need to see is the view ratings and all of that. So, but I think people have enjoyed the program so much.
Definitely.
I would hope that they would recommission it. That was good. Well,
fingers crossed for another series next year, then. Let's hope.
I hope so. I know that we all really enjoyed making it, so I hope we get the opportunity to do it again.
Yeah, fingers crossed. This is the bit of the podcast that every guest either hates or loves. And I've got three questions for you that are not necessarily difficult questions, but I think they potentially are difficult to answer.
Okay.
So the first one is, if you had to redesign your own garden, the whole garden, with one type of plant, so you can have multiple varieties of that one plant, which would it be?
Oh my God, that is a difficult one. Wow, okay. I think I would probably end up using grasses.
Oh, okay.
I think grasses have this thing about them where, you know, you put them in, some of them can be quite statuesque, some of them can be quite subtle, but they provide quite a long period of interest as well. And also there are grasses that are available for different conditions as well. And you know, they also can have different textures as well. But what I love about them is when you get that slight breeze and they just dance in the breeze, and that is that sight of grasses dancing in the breeze is absolutely beautiful. But always plant them en masse. And I think grasses need to be planted en masse. That's when they look best. So yeah, I would say it would probably be grasses.
Okay. On a similar vein, if you could garden only using one tool ever again, what would it be?
I actually garden using one tool most of the time, and it is by Sneebore, and it is their long handle trowel that actually is beautiful, and I always recommend it to people, especially gardeners who are starting out on their gardening journey. I always say, if you're going to invest in tools, Secateurs Niwaki and hand tools Sneebore, because all the metalwork is hand forged, and it is shaped into a very sharp Almost like a, like I guess like an arrowhead, and it is absolutely fantastic. And I garden with that.
Okay, so that it is then. And the age-old question: if you had to impart one piece of gardening wisdom on a new gardener or a new garden owner, what would it be?
No grass, and definitely no artificial grass.
That didn't take any time at all for you to.
Can you imagine? I've actually said use ornamental grasses, but I take the lawn away.
I thought you were saying don't use any grasses. I was going to say you've just gone back on it straight away.
No, use ornamental grasses. Just don't have a lawn.
Yeah,
it opens up areas for more planting. So why not?
It was an absolute joy to talk with Manoj, and I hope you'll agree that there definitely needs to be another season of Garden of the Year. You can follow Manoj on Instagram, where you'll find him at Manoj_Maldo. Join me next week, where I'll have yet another fantastic guest from the world of gardening. You can follow me on Instagram at View from the Potting Bench, or subscribe to my newsletter to find out who that might be.